Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Portland's favorite morning roast.
I was listening to the boys this morning.
It's time for your Sunrise Guys.
They've got really good meat. They got great meat.
Dirt and Sprague.
No, dude, get right to the meat.
On the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number three. Dirt and Sprague here, Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube.
That's good shit right there.
Yeah, it is, man. We got a lot more college football this hour. It all begins tomorrow at 9 AM from Dublin. We'll get to our dirty poll coming up here in about 20 minutes. Who is team number six? The top five will be next week. We drug the dirty poll out to the Friday before week one, so you'll find out the top five all of next week. We'll have some more previews for you, and we'll do number six here coming up. A little bit different than normal because we couldn't find anybody, and everybody we asked to come on said either didn't respond or said no. So we're going to go kind of fly by the seat of our pants. That's in 20 minutes. And then a stat that I'm wondering, will it still be relevant in a handful of years because something happened recently that made it at least on the outside look, hey, maybe this isn't as important as it used to be. So I'll explain what that is, and we'll get to that coming up later on. I cannot begin to tell you how excited I am for tomorrow. I know that the slate isn't great. I will argue till I'm blue in the face that it's ridiculously dumb that everybody's not playing tomorrow and the entire sport should be beginning. We should have games last night. We should have games tonight. There should be games all day tomorrow. That's the way that the college football season should begin, but instead we get like five games and one of them's in Dublin, Ireland, because why not start the college football season on American soil as an American sport? If you're looking for things to keep an eye on for tomorrow, I will give you those in a moment. Are you working tomorrow, Swag? Is our Hops game tomorrow? Or you're going to be
Hops game, it's a 5 o'clock first pitch.
Okay, so you have some time earlier in the day.
I will get the morning games. I'll get that Dublin game. I'll get most of the USC game.
Okay.
It should be over.
I would imagine.
By the time I need to head to the ballpark.
I would imagine so, yeah, because I've already gone about the idea of I'm figuring out what I'm making for week zero. Because week one, I'm going to be down at Autzen. The wife's going. Teddy ball game's going. So we're all going to be out of the house, and I'll be down.
Yeah.
So won't be with the feet up on the couch, and we catch up on everything when I get back later in the evening. Because Oregon's home opener is a week from Saturday. So tomorrow's one of those Saturdays I just get to kind of hang and watch football all day. And so I will have it on my television from start to finish, from the beginning to the end. I've decided two different things. We're going to go wings. Wings is the best go-to for me for football season. I love smoking wings.
Yes.
So I'm going to be up early. I don't know how early the wings will go on, but they're going to go on before 10 a.m.
Let's see. We got a 12:30 kick.
My guess will probably be I'll be watching the first or second quarter of the TCU North Carolina game standing outside.
Yeah.
Actually, I do have it next to the man cave, so maybe I could just kind of pop in and out of the man cave and watch the game and then go
check
on the wings.
Now, wings don't have to smoke forever. That's the nice thing.
Quick and
an
easy.
Hour.
Dude, it's perfect.
And then you
toss
take them
in
off,
some sauce.
You put them in the oven, and then you crank it up again so you get a little sear.
A little sear on that, actually.
Yeah.
That's good shit right there.
That is.
So I'm going to do wings tomorrow.
Hog them up, Sikorsky.
And then we're going to do some buffalo chicken dip as well because both could just kind of sit and linger all week.
You can
just kind of go back, get another scoop, give me one more wing. Why not? So that's what's on the agenda for me, food wise tomorrow. I'm very excited about that.
Mixing a salad in there?
No, come on now.
Get the f*** out of here.
9 a.m. is where we begin in Dublin, Ireland. I will say one cool note about this game, and they've done a really good job of this over the years. I feel like Utah and TCU, maybe there's somebody out there that I'm forgetting, are some of the best at like the one off specialty helmets.
Oh, yeah.
So TCU's, they're in Dublin. They came out with their horny frog on their helmet.
Nice.
Has a little four-leaf clover coming out of his mouth.
Beautiful.
It's like, that's, remember the Utah one where they had the rose kind of intertwined with the logo? That was such a great one. So those are two that kind of stand out to me in terms of the specialty helmet. So TCU does have that going for them. It is crazy to think about what's on the line for Bill Belichick tomorrow. Where the mentality of the public is at on, he is a laughingstock in the sport of football at this point.
And you're exposed out there.
Yes.
If this isn't week one. You're buried on a Saturday slate.
You're the only game, dude.
You kick it off. You get all the focus right out of the chute.
That USC game don't start till what, 12:30? I think the USC game starts. So you're alone. If you're getting smoked and blown out by TCU, it's all anybody's going to be talking about, and it's all anybody's going to be watching. Let me take a brief look back in the DeLorean here from last year. Do people remember that game from last year? So he takes over at North Carolina.
It was hideous.
There was the thought of, like, this is the next Deion Sanders kind of boom. It's going to be great for college football and ratings, and celebrities are going to show up and all this, right? They have all the dignitaries of North Carolina athletics in Chapel Hill at that game. It's a night game of week one. I want to say it was a standalone game on, like, the Sunday night game or something of week one. It was kind of in its own little world there. They went down the field and scored a touchdown like a hot dog going down a hallway. Like, just couldn't have been easier for them. 7-0, fireworks show, light show. I was just watching highlights of this yesterday. It was making me laugh out loud. The announcers were, I think it was Reese Davis that was on the call. Everybody's all in. And then TCU, I believe, rattled off 48 unanswered points. And there was about 12 people left in the stands, and they ended up losing the game 48-14. En route to, they did win the next 2 weeks, although it was ugly. They went 4-8 last year. And you go into this season with all the stuff that's going on behind the scenes, with all the distractions that are taking place. Like, the Colorado Deion thing was a financial windfall for that university, an enrollment windfall for that university, an attention windfall for that university. And they were able to milk that for 2 years. They got something out of it, and some would argue they're maybe still getting something out of it, although I don't take them very seriously as a football program. North Carolina's gotten nothing out of Bill Belichick. Nothing. There hasn't been that one moment of, like, hey, that was a good year. Everybody talked about us all season long in a positive tone, and it's bringing more enrollment and more money and more eyeballs to North Carolina football than we've had in quite some time outside of Drake May in recent history. They've got nothing. They were terrible last year. It's been nothing but distractions. It's been nothing but a disaster off the field. His general manager is maybe fired, but maybe not fired, but we don't really know. He's dating a 24-year-old. Like, everything about it has been ugly and a disaster. And if they come out and get drilled tomorrow, they get East Tennessee State in week two. I believe that's the team Eddie George coaches, but don't correct me if I'm wrong there.
I'll go look.
And then the weeks after that, you ready for this? They go on the road to Clemson. You ain't winning that game. I don't care what you feel about Clemson. You ain't winning that game. Notre Dame comes to town, and they're going to kick the absolute living crap out of you. And then you go on the road to Pitt the week after that, who's been kind of a feisty, just outside of the top 25 team over the last couple of years. That doesn't mention their games against Miami later in the season. Louisville, who I think will be pretty good. Virginia won 10 games last year, and you have to go on the road and play them. Like, it's, if they get smoked by TCU tomorrow, the writing will be on the wall, and I'll give you the take right now. He's not going to make it past the end of October as the head coach of North Carolina. There's no reason to hold on to him.
I mean,
there's no argument for it whatsoever. There's not a recruiting class.
No.
There's not this, well, we're just waiting for X, Y, and Z. None of it. There's no future argument that you
Does
could possibly
he have a
make.
Big buyout situation?
No, not at all.
Yeah, you can. That's just a matter of whoever it is in the administration's whose, you know, personal thing it was to bring Belichick in has to swallow their ego at
it
that
just,
point.
It is okay. Looking like an
It's just not going to work. Eddie George, not the head coach of Eastern Tennessee.
Is he a head coach, though?
I think so. It might be more, maybe Tennessee State.
Tennessee State, okay. I thought school in Tennessee.
I don't know. Let me go look.
Okay, I thought he was a head coach down there somewhere. Either way, North Carolina will win that game. Other than that, the first month is tough for them. That's the first thing to watch right out of the game.
Oh, he's a Bowling Green right now.
Bowling Green. In the MAC. Okay, there you go. Bowling Green must have moved on. If you're looking for something right out of the gate to laugh about, Bill Belichick getting drilled on national TV would be kind of funny.
He was at Tennessee State.
Okay, that's where he was and then took the job.
2024, then took the Bowling Green.
Appreciate the
correction. Fight on Falcons.
There we go. We found out something new. TCU, North Carolina, right out of the gate. Let's all laugh and watch Bill Belichick in misery. Or, hey, maybe we'll turn around and point the finger at TCU if they find a way to lose a game to that crappy North Carolina team. I think TCU is probably going to win that one and win it going away. That line in that game, by the way, we will spread the line today, a little over an hour from
yes.
now. 8.5, TCU -8.5. For those in the betting world, noodle on, 8.5 is your line there.
If I'm not headed to Vancouver.
No. We're going to do, we'll have some picks today. This is kind of our final 2 weeks
of
preseason.
I would lay that wood.
I'm laying that wood too. Teaser. Later on in the afternoon, we were talking about USC. We don't need to get into them again. They're starting 5 true freshmen, so that's the only thing.
Yeah.
And then that, and one of our P1s pointed out the point from Ryan Abraham on, you know, the Gary Patterson hire has worked out already. It's like, well, how do you know?
Yes.
You haven't coached.
I mean, the offense, USC's going to score points. We know that.
Yes.
The question is this a 48-41 skin of your teeth
right.
at the end of it? Or is this a 56-3,
right.
like, oh, crap, they hired somebody that was serious about defense, and look at that.
Yes, they went 9-3 last year in the regular season. The three games that they lost, the final scores, Illinois beat them 34-32. You give up 34 points to Illinois. Notre Dame scored 34 on them in a rainstorm, 34-24, and they came up to Autzen at the end of the season and gave up 42 to the Ducks, 42-27. So you gave up 34, 34, and 42. That's your problem. So you can feel however you want.
San Jose's coming off a 3-9 season.
I mean, that should be over at the end of the first quarter. It's one of those kind of games. I think the line is in the 30s for that game. You should, take them out back, if you know what I mean. So that just keep an eye on just their freshmen and how their defense
looks.
Yes. Those are the only two
things. So their head coach is the former Navy head coach.
Yes, it is, because Brent Brennan moved on.
Yes.
Later on in the afternoon, just slightly, actually about 30 minutes after that one starts, you do get NC State, Virginia.
This I'm interested in because these are two teams that flirt with being relevant in the ACC on occasion.
Yeah, every
year.
And
one of them quite – is there going to be any competition for Miami in the ACC this year outside of Clemson?
Virginia was like two plays away from going to the college football playoff last year. They played Duke in the ACC title game. They lost at the end. If they would have won the ACC title, Virginia would have been in the college football
playoff. It is a conference game. You have power four opponents going up against each other. There's not a lot of that on opening week.
No, that's a fun little game on ESPN.
So there's big curiosity. I'll probably watch USC first, come out, first couple of drives. Okay, offense.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
21-0 at the end of the first quarter. You're like, all right, let's flip over.
Let's go see what we got going on over here.
That seems like a good strategy. So that game is at 12:30 on ESPN. And then some random notes for the rest of the day. We do get the first ever FBS game for North Dakota State tomorrow.
Ah.
The Bison are now at the FBS level. They're playing in the Mountain West. They are at,
2:30
on CBS Sports Network.
Playing
Jacksonville State, so it's like, all right, not a lot there. They are favored in that game. Now, correct me if I'm wrong
here. Isn't Jacksonville, like, horrible?
Yeah, wasn't Rich Rodriguez there before coming to West Virginia? I think that's where he was kind of revitalizing them. Maybe I'm wrong. I feel like we have changed the rule now where you don't have to, you're bowl eligible right away.
They fixed that. That was the James Madison rule.
That's what I thought.
Stupid.
Because James Madison was one of the last notable teams that did this, and they went to the Sun Belt.
Yeah.
And immediately were relevant.
And they couldn't even play in the conference title.
They could not. And they were pissed about that. And that was when I think Cignetti was there in that transition, and then the rest was kind of history for them. That's one to keep. North Dakota State's just one to keep. They've been so good at the lower level.
They've won 10 of the last 15 FCS titles.
It certainly is an adjustment, no doubt. But you know who's not in the Mountain West anymore? Boise State.
Yeah.
Now, you still got UNLV in there. You still got, there's still some other teams that you're going to be, all right, that's, UNLV might be pretty good this year. Outside of that,
Who's left?
Nevada. Hawaii's playing
tomorrow.
We'll get to them in a moment. Wyoming.
Yes.
So, it's not necessarily a guarantee. I think it's tougher. The Mountain West, as it stands now, is probably tougher than what the Sun Belt was when JMU came in.
Probably.
But maybe we're splitting hairs there. Just keep it. North Dakota State's been so good. We've seen a team do it, and it translates right away. There's not necessarily this big growing pain that has to happen. So, North Dakota State being in the mix, they play tomorrow. You get their first FBS game. Speaking of Hawaii, they are on the road at Stanford.
On the ACC network, of course.
How do you feel if your team is at home and only favored by 4 points against Stanford? Or, excuse me, against Hawaii?
Not good.
That's not good. Now I got to go find that drop. Where is that one?
Not good.
Not good.
Jeez, oh, Pete.
Stanford is a 4-point favorite. That game is at 4 o'clock on the ACC network. Bill Connolly, our buddy, the professor himself, has Hawaii in the college football playoff
this year.
See
what the Fighting Timmy Changs have up their sleeves.
If they win that game tomorrow, I'll allow it, dude. I'll allow it. They get Stanford and UNLV the first 2 weeks of the season. So you got a shot. You beat Stanford, you get an ACC win, and then you get your biggest competition probably in the Mountain West.
Look out.
Look out for the Rainbow Warriors. Them going to the college football playoff would be hilarious. Everybody in Florida State wants Mike Norvell fired, but Florida State can't afford to fire Mike Norvell. They open at 4 o'clock on the C-Dub. They're taking on New Mexico State.
Yeah.
They are a 31.5-point favorite in that game.
They better win by 50.
You better win by 50. The way it is so funny to think about their last couple of years. From going undefeated with Jordan Travis and, this is so egregious, we got left out of the playoff. To then going on the road the next year. I want to say their first game was the Dublin game.
Yeah, it was.
And Georgia Tech beat him with DJ Uiagalelei at quarterback. And then they follow that up with beating Alabama in their opener last year. Dominating Alabama in their opener last
year.
And then
they totally fell apart.
And then won, what did they win, 3 games on the year? I think they went 3-9 or 4-8. They were a disaster. So everybody wants Mike Norvell fired. That's one where the ESPN app or the RIP ticker comes in handy. You don't really need to watch it.
No.
But just if it's tight in the second half, the nervous energy in Tallahassee will be worth all of the offseason
weight.
It's on the CW. You can find it. So just keep an eye on that one. And then last but not least, and they are going to be my pick this year to be the G6 winner, so I'm curious how they look. I think UNLV will be the G6 team in the college football playoff. Mullins. I'm a big Dan Mullen guy. I love his pathway of bringing in, you know, guys who were blue chip players that didn't quite pan out at their previous school and kind of, you know, rehabilitating them, for lack of a better phrase. Anthony Calandria was this. He was a starter at Virginia. In then great form, he goes to UNLV. He has a decent year as a starter. Now, where is he? He's a starting quarterback in Nebraska. Now, I don't know if Nebraska could be any good this year, but it's kind of that offshoot back. They're almost a last chance you to a certain extent at the G6 level. I think it's a pretty smart way to want to run a program. Boise State is out of the Mountain West again, so that big primary threat that they had there. I want to say that was the Mountain West Championship. I don't know if it was about last year, but definitely the year before that. So I'm high on UNLV this year. We get our first look at them. They're going to likely play Jackson Arnold a lot of quarterback. He was that big five-star cat from Oklahoma who didn't really pan out. Now he's at UNLV. So that game's at Fox. It's a night game on Fox. Should be a decent atmosphere, I'd imagine. Week zero, right, at Allegiant Stadium. So Memphis is another team that has a G6 shot. So Memphis and UNLV.
Be curious to see how much of that stadium they fill up.
I mean, it's never that full, but I don't know. Aesthetically, it doesn't look as bad as some of the other NFL ones in my mind. Sometimes when teams play in NFL stadiums, it just doesn't look right, doesn't look great. UNLV at least looks solid. The grass on the field looks good. So that's the last game of the Week Zero slate. I can't wait. I'm going to watch all the way. That last game will probably end around 10:30 or whatever it is tomorrow night, and I'm going to be on my couch watching every single second that I possibly can. Happy football season, everybody. We're almost there. Speaking of which, let's go to number 6 in the Dirty Poll. We're going to do it a little bit differently today. And are we sleeping on this team? Who is number 6? I'll explain. We'll play some audio from their head coach. That is next, 105.1 FM, The Fan.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B-plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B-minus or a C-plus life, because when you're living a B or B-plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A-plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
A couple of quick notes here before we get to our latest edition of the Dirty Poll. Can we take a brief moment to say a big thank you to the weather gods out there? Man, have you seen the forecast for the next week?
No.
I mean,
it's been great. It was a little warm to start the week, but then it's been fantastic out at the ball. Like, great nights.
Dude, perfect. I mean, yes, this has been delightful. Now, I get we might have some, we just got it was a little hot Monday. Tuesday is a little warm again. I'm a little bee. I'll acknowledge it. I'm so tired of the heat. I'm ready for fall weather.
But no, the last few nights, just utterly fantastic. No, I don't.
Here's your highs. Can I give you your highs for the next 10 days?
Yes.
77 today.
Lovely.
72.
Perfect.
73. 79. 75.
Perfect.
A little chilly. 62. Let's throw a curveball at you.
Oh.
Ooh, back up to 68.
Okay.
65, 67, 76.
Okay. 62, I'm a little.
Is that too chilly for you? Come on. You're warm-blooded.
Still right
like
now.
I am.
No, I'm warm-blooded, but if you just put me right in that mid 70 range here for a little while.
I mean, mid 70s is perfect. There's no doubt about that.
It cools off at night. I can open all the windows. I don't have to run my AC all damn day.
That's such an underrated point, man. When the weather, the temperature is so good that you can have your windows open all day, but it doesn't ever feel warm.
I know.
That's when the weather is perfect
for me. Get the ceiling fan going to keep the air moving.
73 degrees. Let it flow. Windows are, yes, amen to that. One other note, and then we'll get to the Dirty Poll. And no, Harley, I'm not going to release all the teams right now. We're doing it one at a time. Damn it. You're going to find out the top five next week, all right? Come on. We got to be patient in modern society.
Yes.
Sometimes a TV show is going to release one episode a week. You got to wait till next week. Although I also hate that, so I shouldn't use that as the example.
I was going to say.
Have you seen the controversy?
Sound like
not the
Mrs.
right word.
Harley right there. Take your time.
Take your time. Are we prepared for the potential of the Washington Commanders to bring back their old logo and name potentially? Did you see what they did? So they released in their team store. They are claiming it's because they have to have items with the trademarked stuff on it in order to keep the trademark, if that makes sense. They put a bunch of gear up on their website that had the old logo on it. And do you know what happened?
Oh, it probably went like hotcakes. It sold out. Yeah.
And hours. It was gone. It was gone. And this is now leading a lot of people to be like, that was their trial balloon to be like, is there still an appetite? Oh, there's still an appetite. So just file that one away. I don't know if anything will happen anytime soon. File that one away. The dirty poll rolls on. A little bit different today. We usually try and get a guess. We got most of them lined up, at least an idea of who's going to be on.
Well,
we
had
five.
Some great ideas for some things, and it's just the point in the calendar where it didn't work out. It's not that people wouldn't...
Our first shot was Wright Gazaway because he played at Georgia, our K2 buddy.
We're like, let's have him on where he's not having to talk about Blazer nonsense.
He's got a little bit more important things going on this week, and so he was out
of
pocket.
Busy doing some things.
Yes, we tried Randy McMichael, who was we've had on the show before. I think we had him on last year.
It's tough because you've got two things. Anybody with school-age kids is gearing up for back to school.
Yes.
Other people are getting in one last little summer vacation before they have to hunker down for... all of football season.
Right. This is kind of it. Your last hurrah.
Yeah.
So we tried. A couple of people didn't hear back. So we're going to just do it on our own. Damn it. We'll do it live like Bill O'Reilly many moons ago. And Georgia is a fascinating team this year. And it's funny that they're the preview team. So yesterday we were having a conversation after the show. The fact that we have a 94-7 host who you would not be able to pinpoint in any way, shape, or form as a college football fan...
Yeah.
As the most diehard SEC Alabama fan,
well, this
is one of the funniest things that exists in
this
building.
This is when people say, oh, we're football fans in this area, but there's nothing else going on about their lives that would indicate they're into football.
Right.
This is the difference between the SEC. Somebody that you grew up there.
Right.
And you may have totally different interests outside of whatever.
Right.
But when it's football season in the SEC...
it just means more, man.
This is what we're talking about.
Greg Glover is a diehard Alabama fan.
Yes.
He happened to be in the building, yet we don't always see him.
He does not fit the mold of traditional SEC football honk.
Think about a Portland hipster at a Timbers game.
Yeah.
And that guy lives and breathes and watches the Paul Feinbaum
show
every day.
Hanging out at Powell's.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we're talking SEC football in Alabama. He's a cat guy. He loves Alabama football. And so... with this then that our boss, the big man Cooley, was hanging around, and we started talking college football with him, and he brought up Georgia. And it was funny, just the synergy of it, of like, man, it feels like nobody's really paying attention to Georgia this year, huh? And it's, they didn't get a single first place vote going into the season. I don't know if our brains are just broken because they have not won a playoff game in 2 years. So they went back-to-back years winning the national championship. And now the last 2 years they've won the SEC, but have been bounced once by Notre Dame in their first playoff game. And then last year it was Ole Miss, and they couldn't stop Trinidad Chambliss at Ole Miss. And so I don't know if we're just kind of forgetting about them for that reason. The SEC, despite all the debates we want to have and the yelling and making fun of them for pouting over not winning a championship, is still arguably top to bottom the best conference in the sport. They don't necessarily have as many championship contenders, if you will, as the Big Ten. But it's still incredibly impressive to win the SEC. And Georgia's done it back-to-back years. They've dominated Texas when they've played them. They had a bit of an issue with Alabama, and then they got that monkey off their back last year in the SEC title game and just kicked the ever-loved crap out of them. And so Georgia's kind of going into this year. Ironically, I get it. Like, they're in the top five in most AP polls, so how could they be under the radar? But nobody's really picking them to win the national championship. They're just considered a good team who Notre Dame's getting picked, Ohio State's getting picked, Oregon's getting picked, Miami's getting picked. I've not seen a lot of preseason picks of Georgia to win the national title.
I think that has more to say about the conference than any one particular team. Like,
they're just going to eat each other alive, kind of thing?
They're going to eat each other alive. You're going to hear tons about, well, they had to play non-conference games this season.
You don't know how hard
it is. You don't know how hard that is.
You don't get it, man.
Plus, we had to play a 10th Power 4 team.
We didn't get to play Towson in November anymore.
That's right.
Well, they had a presser the other day, and one of the things that is unique at the top of college football that you don't get often, and Georgia is one of the teams in this category, when you look at the 10 or 11-ish top 10 teams or 11 teams in college football, the vast majority of them are returning a starting quarterback, which is just, you just, I don't know, it feels kind of rare for the modern era of the sport. I don't know if it's an NIL thing, but Ohio State, Notre Dame, Oregon, Georgia, Texas, Oklahoma, like you go down the list and there's more than that of teams who are returning a starting quarterback. Georgia's one of them, and here is Kirby Smart on their returning quarterback, Gunnar Stockton, and where he's grown from last year to this year.
Gunnar's improved immensely. I don't think it's in one area. I don't think it's I think it's confidence. I think it's his basically his mental capacity to handle a lot of information at once, process that information, and yet still make good decisions. Confidence in the pocket, his movement skills in the pocket have improved. His awareness of protections have improved. His ability to handle the pressure of the shot clock, a nine-word call, the defenses we're throwing at him, and getting people lined up has improved. But he's done some good things this camp. You can see his growth kind of in a lot of areas, because some of it's leadership, some of it's mentorship, and some of it's just throwing ability and getting the ball downfield. So pleased with Gunner's growth and really pleased with his work ethic.
The last time they had one of those prototypical Georgia quarterbacks, a walk-on story that was, you know, a homegrown Georgia Bulldog fan.
Not Stetson Bennett?
Stetson Bennett won back-to-back national championships. Gunner Stockton, when you hear him talk and you hear the backstory of his life, was he was put on this earth to do one thing and one thing only, and that was to play quarterback at the University of Georgia. That's it, man. He's riding his pickup truck. Like, it just, it fits. It's to a T. And so there's
7 speeding tickets.
I don't think he's gotten any trouble driving. I love the way Georgia's schedule stacks up to this year. First 3 games should be wins. Arkansas starting over. That's the only SEC opponent in there. And then they get Oklahoma at home. I think they're going to win that game before they get Vanderbilt at home, starting a new quarterback. I think it's going to be a bit of a rebuilding year for Bama, and or excuse me, for Vanderbilt. And then they go on the road to Alabama. So you're looking at a team that should probably be 5-0 before they head to Tuscaloosa. That, of course, was a classic game a couple of years ago where they were down big and then came back and damn near won it in Kalen DeBoer's first year. As I mentioned, they did have a bit of an issue with DeBoer. He won the first 2 matchups against Kirby Smart. He was 2-0 against him. And then, you know, the SEC championship game happened last year, and that ended with a pretty emphatic thud in favor of Georgia. It's interesting when you look into a team, because I felt very highly about them coming into the year just because they're Georgia and you feel high about them every year. They recruit at the top of the sport. They're as talented as anybody in college football. They're returning a ton of talent. So it's like, what's not to like? And then you dig further into some of the numbers, and I want to get to something about Georgia and tie this into Oregon. We'll do that in the next segment and just ask the question, does this metric matter the way that it used to? Because it used to kind of be a bit of a gospel with the way we talk about and look at college football, and now maybe that's up in the air, or maybe it's not for you. I'm just curious where people are at on it. But when you look at this roster, man, you got a returning starting quarterback in Gunner Stockton, who last year, he's not lighting the world on fire, but it's his first year as a starter. He had 24 touchdowns, 5 picks, completed 70% of his passes. So he's efficient. He's a tough runner. He had nearly 500 rushing yards, a chunk of rushing. I think he had 10 rushing touchdowns. Like, he led the team. So he's a physical guy around the goal line. They have arguably the best offensive line in the sport. They had a true freshman running back in Nate Frazier last year, who was one of the top guys in the country a year previous coming out of high school. Have nearly 1,000 yards, averaged over 5.5 yards to carry, 6 touchdowns himself. So he's coming back bigger and stronger going into year 2. They love the crop of tight ends that they have. And their defense, seemingly every year, is one of the best in the nation. They have awesome linebackers. They're elite in the back end. And they love some of their edge rushers, including some of the big-time freshmen that they brought in this upcoming season. It's unique because they're kind of fitting into this mold of there's really not a lot of questions. And when you look at a lot of teams atop the sport, we go through it and you're like, all right, that's a strength, that's a strength, that's a strength, that's a strength. It just comes down to this or that, right? For Oregon, it's can your coordinators figure it out and does your offensive line gel together? For Georgia going into the year, there's really only 2 questions I have. Can Gunner Stockton win you a game himself if you need him to do it? Can he kind of take over against an elite defense and kind of put the team on his back? Now, I'm not saying that they can't win a national championship if he doesn't do that. I would just feel better about their chances if he's able to do that. And then wide receiver is really the only other question mark. That is a massive hole for them in terms of experience and guys who have been there and done it, if you will. And so if they can find some game changers on the outside, but again, they feel good about where they're at tight end. So maybe it's not quite as important and they'll be a little bit more like Oregon last year where you're using the tight end more than you are the wide receivers. There's not a lot of questions on Georgia, and that will lead to, I'm going to get to this coming up next. There's a metric out there that has Oregon doing something they've never done in the history of their program. And it has Georgia as the number one team in the country. So to further highlight how we're sleeping potentially on Georgia, I'll explain, we'll play some of the audio, and does this metric matter the way that it used to? Or has that model been completely broken? Because one team is another fascinating case study of it. So we'll get to that, got some audio around it. We'll dive into that next on 105.1 FM The Fan.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back in. Swag's selling me some Hard Rockers gear over here, sending me emails with links. Now I want to go buy my School of Miners. Of course, the brand man comes in. He knows. He's got the lowdown on the School of Miners.
Small school
college football. Oh, he's your go-to guy. He showed me their stadium where there's a, it's basically like a drive-in movie theater where you go park and you can watch the game from your car.
Yeah, on one end back of the your truck horseshoe, in, behind
South
the track.
Dude, I'm all in, man. Let's go Miners.
Yeah.
Somebody's saying dirt out here, leaving it out that it's supposed to rain. Maybe I'm happy that it's supposed to rain. Maybe I'm looking forward to some rain, all right? Fat guys have a hard time in the heat. I need sweatshirt weather back, okay? I need to cover this thing up. I need to, the boiler needs to be tamped down a little bit. And you know how you do that? You put a sweatshirt on. And I can't wait for sweatshirt weather.
Are you hoodie guy, quarter zip guy?
Any of them.
Crew neck?
I'm not a big crew neck guy. But any of the hoodie, the go-to hoodie on a chilly day, nothing more comfortable than that. Nothing.
And you're resting your hands in the pouch, right?
The whole time. You're pouching it up the whole time. Hands are warm, fingers are warm.
I see little Teddy rocking this little hoodie sweatshirt thing.
It is a good look, dude. They got some
Grubby
cool gear.
Right. The mascot's name is Grubby.
It's perfect. He's Grubby. We will get to, coming up at the top of the hour, what do we got at 9 a.m.? Let me check my old show sheet. What did I have planned for 9 a.m.? Now I got sidetracked with Miners talk. Ooh, college football audio smorgasbord.
Oh, yeah.
Kurt Cignetti. The greatest ad campaign in television history returns, and we're all looking for who is this year's Penn State. May I have found the candidate? That didn't make sense. I may have found.
You may have found.
The candidate.
The candidate to big
flop.
Expectations.
Big
we're
expectations.
Flopping and firing a coach midway
who
through the
is
season.
Flopping this year. Have we found the team? We'll explain that. So all that coming up here at the top of the hour. I saw this yesterday, and it tied into perfectly the dirty pool. Georgia comes in at number 6. We'll get to the top 5 next week. There is a ranking and a metric out there that for a long time has mattered and has been a bit of gospel in college football. And that ranking and metric is the composite blue chip ratio. So basically looking at the players on your roster, what they are graded in terms of recruiting over, you know, their 5-star, 4-star status.
Right.
And just taking all of that and compiling it into a composite grading of your roster. Historically speaking in college football, as I mentioned, this has been the North Star. If you want to win at the highest level, you have to be in this category because outside of Cam Newton and Auburn, who beat my team, and he's maybe the greatest college football player of the modern generation, you've not had another team that's been able to win it all. You've had teams like Washington made it to a title game outside of that blueprint. TCU made it to a title game outside of that blueprint. You've had teams make the, you know, Cincinnati made a playoff. Yeah. You've had teams have good years. But in terms of winning the national championship.
Until Indiana
blew up the model. And so there's kind of a multi-part of this segment that I found interesting. And the first is, we'll finish up the conversation on Georgia. The most talented team in the country, according to this metric, is Georgia. To the note of, are we not paying enough attention to them? The composite talent rankings say that Georgia, from an overall talent standpoint, has the most talented roster in the country. What makes this unique and tying it back locally, and then I'm going to get to the Indiana side of this and ask, just does it matter? Do we think it matters as much as it used to? For the first time in 8 years, the combination atop this list has changed. Mm-hmm. For 8 consecutive years, 1, 2, and 3 in varying orders. Yeah. Sometimes they'd be 1, sometimes it'd be 2, sometimes it'd be 3.
It's but like these, the F1 circuit.
That's right. But these three teams have been in the top 3, rotating in the top 3 for 8 consecutive years. To no surprise, Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State. For 8 consecutive years, for the first time, somebody has crashed that party.
There's been a stranglehold in the team talent composite rankings for years. For 7 straight years, the number 1, number 2, and number 3 teams have been the exact same 3 teams. It's been Alabama, it's been Georgia, it's been Ohio State. That changed this year for the first time since, I believe, 2018. There's a new team in the top 3, and that team is Oregon. And I think that speaks to what Dan Lanning has built at Oregon. This is not a Chip Kelly spread pace Oregon offense. It's not even what Mario Cristobal did, which was a very, very talented team, but maybe not to the levels of the real blue buds in the country. Oregon is now built like Georgia. Oregon is now built like the Alabamas of old. They have the talent from top to bottom on that roster to stack up with the Ohio States of the world year after year. And I have Oregon as my preseason Big Ten title champion. I believe in this Oregon team. And this team talent composite metric, with again, is not perfect, backs that up. Like, Oregon has a loaded roster. They're double-digit former five-stars on the roster, 54-star recruits on the roster. They only have, I think, 26 former three-star recruits on their roster. They haven't taken a ton of transfers this year. They built it through high school. They built it the traditional way. And Dan Lanning has a roster fully capable of winning a national championship.
So that is Chris Hummer. He was on the Ruffino and Joe show. I enjoyed their show. I think they just got picked up by 24/7 Sports. They do a good job talking college football. It's one of those things. They pop up in my algorithm. I watch them quite often. I saw that yesterday. And again, this isn't the end-all, be-all, but it just is it's a significant movement in terms of where the overall roster is, and it's one of the reasons that they're in a bit of a different conversation from where they've been in years past. The million-dollar question in all of this is, does it still matter? Was Indiana the outlier, or are they the trend? And just simply by that, I mean, look at them again this year. So Indiana last year broke this model, and they just shattered it, right? Like, for every team, for the Auburn team that won the national championship, you could say, yeah, they didn't have the blue chip ratio, but they had one of the best college quarterbacks of the modern era running their team, one of the most unstoppable players that we have ever seen. And so while it didn't necessarily make sense of like, man, Auburn won a title, it was a bit of a wonky year. Nobody really saw Oregon coming that way. It should be noted, too, if Oregon had won that championship against Auburn, they also would have been outside of the blue chip model. So both teams were representative in that stat. So it's a bit of an outlier year, but you had this Cam Newton superhero thing of like, man, nobody can stop him. This is to take nothing away from Fernando Mendoza. He was a deserving Heisman Trophy winner, and he was the number one overall pick in the draft. He's not Cam Newton. They're not the same thing in terms of dominating and taking over games. So this is, to me, one of the larger things. It's just kind of looming over the sport, because the way that a lot of people use to predict who is going to win or not win at the highest level, is the model broken, or is that a one-off from Indiana? And let me add this, okay? You ready for this? So they come out with this talent composite ranking for everybody in the sport.
Yep.
You might have read it on my show tease. If you didn't, you can play the game. Did you see where Indiana shows up in the Big Ten? Not in the country, in the Big Ten. Are you talking to Brandman? It's okay. If you're talking to Brandman, I'll just give it. Indiana shows up. So I'm looking through this in the Big Ten. I'm like, all right, looking for my Big Ten teams. Your top five in the Big Ten in terms of...
I would think they're still behind Oregon, Ohio State. We know USC had a hell of a recruiting last year.
Yep.
I would venture to say Michigan and who else might they be behind? Everybody's touting UCLA, but I don't know if they got a bunch of five stars or not. Mm-hmm. So they're around seven.
You're going to go seven? Your top five in the Big Ten are as follows. Oregon is number one. Ohio State is number two. USC is number three. Michigan is number four. Washington is number five.
Okay.
Penn State is number six. Nebraska is number seven. UCLA is number eight. Wisconsin is number nine.
Wow.
Minnesota is number 10. Iowa is number 11. Indiana is number 12. They are 12th in the Big Ten in composite talent ranking. They've gone about it in a way that is so out of this world and mind-bending of, like, that's not the way the college football has ever worked, that to me it is the biggest question in the sport this coming up season. Can Indiana do it again? Do they do it again? The numbers again indicate, similarly to last year, that they're not at that level from a composite ranking. So with the coaches and the X's and O's and the fit and all that stuff overcomes that maybe talent gap that they could or could not have in certain games. And I also think they've, to a certain extent, revised the way that we view and grade rosters, right? Like, guys who have more experience or maybe coming from lower levels.
Well, the question is, how many 25-year-olds are still on their roster?
It's a younger roster. We've given you the age now. And so if they are to do it again, they certainly have broken the entire mold and model of what is historically won in college football.
Yes.
I'm not willing to go there off of 1 year. I can't look at a 15-year sample size.
Yeah.
Larger than that, honestly, if you go
anomalies
back.
Anomalies are called anomalies for a reason.
Right. Now, if UCLA wins the Big Ten this year, and they're higher than Indiana, ironically.
Or Penn State. Does Matt Campbell go and he brings a bunch of dudes from Iowa State?
comes together and they win the whole damn thing. Yeah. Like, okay, like if you continue to see it, by all means, I'll say that the model is broken. I just simply can't do it off of 1 year.
No.
And it just, again, brings back the question. They have the, according to composite talent rankings, the 12th most talented roster in the Big Ten. In the Big Ten, not in the country. In the Big Ten. Nebraska, UCLA, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa are all ahead of them. The other ones that you mentioned wouldn't have been a surprise to me.
No.
Oregon, Ohio State, USC.
I would have seen them 6-7.
Them being 12 is just, it's melting my brain.
Iowa.
To be honest. Yeah, come on. Yeah, maybe the whole thing is broken if you're below Iowa and they just won the national championship. But nonetheless, I don't know if it means as much as it used to. I still put some stock in it, though. And Georgia's number one and Oregon is now number two.
You're number two.
First time in program history they've ever cracked
the
top three.
No more chip on your shoulder.
Nobody's giving us a chance this year, man.
Well, it's blue chips on your shoulder. Better damn win.
That was a great line. That was well played.
That's why I've been doing this for 20 years.
That was well played right there. Nobody's picking us. Nobody's picking us.
Eat your own bud.
Last to get to in the final hour, we will start with some college football audio. We'll spread the line at 9:30. It's a, we're like trial and error. We're still in preseason, but we got week zero games to gamble on, so let's do it, baby. 9:27, get your sponsors in to the fan text line. That is 503-864-6326. You can interact with us there. We'll start with some audio around college football, and have we found our faceplant candidate in the sport? Next on the fan.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.